the Honorable Mark A. Barnett, Claire R. Kelly, and Timothy C. Stansu, presiding before case number 26-1472, the State of Oregon, et al. Versus Trump et al. Would the attorney please state their name for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Brian Marshall for the State of Oregon.
I think your colleague just joined. We're just getting started, Ms. Mukadam. Sorry if I've mispronounced, but if you we're just doing introductions, if you could introduce yourself, please, for the record.
Good morning, Rabia Mukadam for the State of New York.
The government.
Good morning, everyone. Claudia Burke on behalf of the government.
And Justin Miller on behalf of the government.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Got a number of other folks on, but they're all clerks and such for the court. So thanks for joining this morning. I mean, we set this up, in anticipation of a request for expedited treatment in this case, and we saw the motion came in last night. So why don't we just go ahead and I'll turn to Mr. Marshall if you've got anything that you want to add beyond what you've put in your paper with regard to the request for expedited treatment. And you're welcome to stay in your seat. I appreciate the we're not in the courtroom. I mean, it's a status conference, so we can work with this. Thank you.
Understood, Your Honor. I think it outlines it quite clearly in the papers. In order to provide the state's complete relief, we are going to need to seek injunctive relief. The bulk of the harm to the states from the Section 122 tariffs is via indirect purchases. The VOS selections case of this court found that that parties have standing to seek remedies for those cases. And given that there is a limited period of time that these tariffs are in place, and that really only declaratory injunctive relief can provide complete relief to the states, we are seeking expedited treatment, and we think that this is a case of national importance that not only the parties but others who are not present here would benefit from the court's guidance on a short-term basis.
Okay, and just for clarification, when you're referencing injunctive relief, are you referring to a permanent injunctive relief at the, you know, based on the merits, or are you also anticipating seeking a TRO and or preliminary injunctive relief, or with the expedited schedule, does that get you where you need, where you're hoping to end up?
Both, although I think we would be open to the court's guidance and other ways to litigate this, but the way that we have that we intend to file our motion tomorrow is a motion for summary judgment, because we think that these are pure legal issues. But in the alternative, if the court disagrees that these are pure legal issues, that we would seek the court's ruling on a preliminary injunction posture. But in either instance, we think that we would have the same briefing schedule. We're filing it in a single motion that meets the 14,000 word limit, and that the underlying issues are effectively the same.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Burke or Mr. Miller? Ms. Burke? Okay.
Thank you. So putting aside the standing question, I think that just briefly, I think plaintiff is misstating what the VOS court held about the states in particular. What the court said about the states is that as long as some of the states were importers, which it looks like that's what plaintiffs are alleging here, we haven't been able to confirm that, but assuming for the purposes of argument that that's true, what VOS said is that as long as some of them are, that's good enough. So we're not conceding the point that that there's any downstream relief. What we're asking for here is another 10 days on the schedule. It's really a logistical issue that we have a small tariff team here at DOJ. Several of them are going to be out of the office the last week of March. And it would be very difficult for us to complete the briefing by the 31st, which is, I think, the day that plaintiffs are suggesting. The plaintiffs have had 3 weeks since the tariffs were imposed to get their papers together. What we're asking for is 3 weeks from tomorrow, which is their proposed date to file their motion for summary judgment / motion for preliminary injunction. So we think that what we're proposing is fair. We're certainly not trying to delay anything. We understand the harm allegations that are being made. We understand the 150-day timeframe. We appreciate the argument. So that's where we are. One thing that I would also propose, and it may not be the right time to do it, but I'd also propose that the court stay any additional 122 cases that come along. One of the things that happened in the first round in the IEPA litigation is that, you know, there were like a flood of plaintiffs who came to the CIT, a flood of plaintiffs who came to other courts, and we ended up basically filing the same brief 15 times, which didn't, I'm not sure it was like helpful to anybody. So we would propose staying all the rest of them and letting this case be the lead, since it seems to address the issue of law that all of the other ones would address as well.
Okay.
Justin, do you have anything further to add?
No, you've covered it all.
Okay. And let me turn back to you, Mr. Marshall, if you have anything to, in response to the comments from the government.
But just to clarify on my comments on the standing issue, I was referring to the paragraphs preceding the ones that directly address the state standing, where it was addressed in the context of a private party. But we think that that economic logic of downstream purchasers having standing to seek injunctive relief applies equally to the states. In terms of
let me just interrupt you there. I mean, to facilitate things and keep things moving along, I mean, do you also have allegations in here of, I think there's a significant amount of overlap in the states here that were also in the Oregon case that was connected to Voss. Do you have the same allegations of some of the same states being direct importers and having that direct stake, so that we can, you know, not get hung up on this question?
Yes. And just in the sense that they will be purchasing as direct importers, something that will be subject over the next 5 months to the Section 122 tariffs, just as a logistical matter, we haven't been able to identify a specific importer of record between when these were imposed something like 2 weeks ago and now, when they've actually been, to be able to find a specific importation of record. That may be by the time that the motion is heard, that we do have that. We will have declarations that talk about the pattern of importing as direct importers, for example, from the state of Washington, that has a large volume of direct imports and that anticipates based on that historical practice that sometime over the next 5 months they will be a direct importer.
Ms. Burke, anything further you want to say on that standing issue then?
I don't think so. I mean, we haven't confirmed either whether the allegation in the complaint is correct, you know, whether there are any of these states that have imported anything, and we'll get busy doing that. But for now, no, nothing further. Thanks.
Okay. Let me just, you know, go through a couple of logistical or procedural questions that we were thinking about in terms of during preparation for this conference. Let me start with a basic one. Government didn't mention answer. Do we need one? Typically we wait for a motion for issue to be joined before we get to summary judgment. Thoughts on that?
I'll go first, I guess, on that. I don't think so.
I mean,
I'm a big fan of getting rid of answers in all 1581I cases. I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. All right. I'm going to guess that you have no objection to that, Mr. Marshall.
Expedition is the order of the day in our view.
Okay. Done. Second, Rule 56, you know, It's kind of weird, you know, it's an I case. I mean, it's not a discovery case, but we also don't really have an administrative record for purposes of the motion. I mean, for these purposes, is it acceptable that we determine that the record for these purposes is really just the proclamation? I don't know if there's anything more than that, but just so that there's, you know, agreement as to what it is that we're looking at. Pursuant to the summary judgment motion. Anyone want to chime in first? Mr. Marshall?
We would agree.
I'll let the plaintiff go first. Yeah.
We would agree with that, with the addition that there is also the CSMS record that we are also challenging, which I believe is ECF 2-2. And so it would be the two documents that are attached to the complaint, the proclamation itself as printed in the Federal Register, and as well as the CSMS message. If there are further changes, some have been predicted to that where this may be amended, we would be challenging them as amended, but I don't think that would change at all the substance of the case.
Okay. Ms. Burke?
I think that's right. I mean, there is an outside chance that we could include a declaration in our papers, particularly if there's a response to the motion for PI, which it looks like there will be. Otherwise, you're right. I don't think that there's anything additional in the record. I will say that one of the awkward things that happened in Boss is that I think the plaintiffs pled it similarly, in the sense that there was the legal question and then a request for refunds in their complaints, but the court didn't rule on the refund issue. Obviously nobody did. It goes without saying. And so that put us in a little bit of an awkward position, because we did have a Rule 56 judgment, but it actually wasn't complete. So I would kind of like put that out there for thought. But I think that's more up to the court than up to the parties.
Okay.
And just to clarify, I thought we were talking about the administrative record absent arguments about standing or pieces of standing. We are planning to file declarations from a majority of states, a declaration from an economist describing the harm to states, and then a separate expert declaration that discusses the statutory terminology and some of the economic history.
Okay.
Chief Judge Barnett,
please,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a little, this is moving very fast, and I want to ask a couple of procedural questions.
Please.
Ms. Burke, you mentioned something about answering the complaint. I didn't understand you to mean that the complaint would not be answered eventually. Am I correct? You're just saying that it would not be answered immediately?
No, I did mean that it would not be answered at all. Because we would jump straight to Rule 56 briefing the way that we did in the previous cases.
And your view is the rules permit that? The court's rules?
I think so. Justin, Mr. Miller might have more thoughts on it, but I do think that. I think the rules do allow you to jump straight to motion for summary judgment briefing even before an answer. Is that right, Justin?
Yeah, I believe the language in the rule is reflecting something along the lines of issue being joined or pleadings being joined. And I think we interpreted it in the Voss case that the pleadings being the dispositive motions. So the government would join issue when we file a response to the dispositive motions.
Okay. A second question I have was something that the plaintiff's lawyers are mentioning about a possible change to the proclamations, am I correct? Wouldn't that require something like an amended, at least an amended complaint, in that the way the case is now postured, you're challenging things as they exist as of the filing of your complaint? In other words, going forward, if the facts of the case change, wouldn't we be looking at what has happened up until the time your complaint was filed?
I think we could file a supplemental complaint or an amended complaint in order to address that. I mean, the rules, I believe, permit complaints to be amended to conform to the facts, even at the trial stage. And so that would be there. It would not change the substance of the challenge, which is that under present economic circumstances, under the facts recited in the proclamation, that they don't trigger the Section 122 authority. And all I'm really referring to is a particular social media post suggesting that we would, that the government intends to change the rate under the proclamation from 10% to 15%. That hasn't occurred yet, but if it does, we would be challenging it on the same grounds.
And possibly by amending your complaint is what you're suggesting.
Yes, in a technical amendment to say that this is an additional, that we are challenging this as amended.
Okay, thank you for your answers.
Okay. Let me, one additional, the next item I wanted to mention is just with regard to the contents of the motion. And in a sense, I think Ms. Burke alluded to some of this where, you know, as the Voss case developed along the way, we folks identified various issues that may not have been fully addressed in the course of the briefing or perhaps even in the course of the decision. To that end, let me simply encourage the plaintiffs in the course of their submission to or preparing their submission to be sure to go back and take a look at, I think, especially the Fed Circuit decision in Voss. And there's a couple of items that they tagged there, without presuming that we necessarily will get to the issue of remedy, because obviously that depends on the decision on the merits. But things like the eBay factors, CASA, the impact of CASA in terms of the scope of any injunction that might issue, are all things that, you know, should we have to get there, we would want to do so with the benefit of the party's briefing on those topics. My recollection is that in one of your earlier email communications with the court, there was reference, and I suspect it is in the context of the standing and some of these declarations that you've mentioned, Mr. Marshall, that you anticipate having to file some sealed documents. Does that remain the case?
I think that we have likely addressed this. I do not think that we have anything that will need to be filed under seal. I think if okay. there are any documents that need to be redacted, it would only to be redact vendor information, which we don't think would be at all necessary to the court's adjudication of the underlying issue. And therefore, unless there was a concern, we would be happy to, you know, figure out a way to provide that underlying information to the government to ensure that there's no concern that information need to be shared with the court. But if there are any redactions that need to be applied, we don't actually think that providing the under seal piece of the documentation would be necessary.
Okay. I mean, if anything changes on that front, I mean, I would encourage you to consult with your colleagues at DOJ. I mean, they, as I'm sure you know, they have a fairly standard JPO language that I suspect would suffice if it's needed here. And the only thing I would ask all of you to do is, if you get to that point and if you are making any changes to that standard language, file a clean copy and maybe a red line or something that identifies where you've had to make case-specific changes just to facilitate our review. I'd appreciate that. I think one other thing I want to flag at this point, I do appreciate the fact that the plaintiffs reached out to the defendants before filing the motion last night. I do, as we did back in the 301 case, and you know we've done in some other cases, I do anticipate that we'll issue a general meet and confer order that, because whatever schedule we end up with, you know, on any kind of an expedited basis, I think it's important that we minimize motion practice as much as possible. So, you know, to the extent that there are motions that will end up having to get filed anywhere along the way, regardless of whether it's required by the rules or not, I would ask that you meet and confer on that motion in anticipation of filing and try to resolve any differences beforehand so that we can minimize the extent of the court's need to get involved in those issues. Okay, so let's go back to specific dates then. All right, I think we've largely gotten past the issue of an answer, and I think where we are, you know, the expectation, the plaintiffs expect to file their motion tomorrow, the 13th. They were hoping for...
Judge Barnett, could I interrupt you?
Please.
I just want to
absolutely
bring up one point because it might avoid us having to deal with or having to decide on something later. I appreciate, Ms. Burke, your concern for having a stay issue because there are going to be many, many cases filed. But there is already one other case filed. And I just thought maybe we should hear from both parties about whether there is whether the pros and cons of allowing that party to catch up and operate on a parallel track or not participate in any way to any extent. So I think we should probably hear from both of you on that. And Ms. Burke, maybe you'll start.
And let me just add in another option, of course, which I think happened in Voss, is to participate, for them to participate here as an amicus.
So we've been thinking about that as well. If those plaintiffs were amenable to, you know, either doing the briefing on the same schedule, consolidating, something that would allow us to maybe file one brief, that would be fine. I don't know whether they are. I doubt they'd be able to file a brief tomorrow, though. So it would require a different schedule. We could also, you know, it's fine for us to do two sets of briefing. I was more making the point that it would be difficult for us to do, you know, a dozen similar cases and probably unnecessary. So I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, but it's fine for us if we want to put everything on one track. It would have to get delayed, just I think necessarily because Burlap and Barley, no, I can't remember the name, Burlap and something, they're not going to be able to file tomorrow, I suspect. If they wanted to appear just as an amicus, that would also be fine. I mean, we're pretty open to whatever would work the best for everybody.
Okay.
We have no objection to the private party case proceeding. I am very hesitant to speak on behalf of another party, but I will say informally, I've communicated with them and I believe that their motion is likely imminent, and that if the case manager were to reach out to counsel for those plaintiffs this morning, they may be able to provide certainty that they will be able to provide a motion this week such that everything can be briefed and argued on the same track. And I think that the one hesitation to staying the other case and only proceeding with the state's case is that the government, it sounds like, may be continuing to challenge the state's standing, and we want to ensure that there is a vehicle to for the court to reach the merits. We think the states provide that vehicle, but to the extent that there's any doubt about that, I think that there is a useful belt and suspenders approach to the private party cases.
Okay. To that end, and would any specific thoughts beyond a parallel schedule to consolidating the two cases?
We would have no objection to them being argued together or separately as the court prefers.
Ms. Yeah, Burke?
We don't either. And particularly if the other case is able to file something tomorrow, we would request that we be able to file one brief in response.
Okay. And any objection to that, Mr. Marshall?
So long as the states are able to reply separately and argue separately, no objection at all. There is a challenge for us to be on the same papers with private parties as governments. But so long as there's no objection to us replying separately, no, that would be fine.
Okay. All right. Let me ask my colleagues if there's anything else that they want to ask about or discuss at the moment. Ms. Burke, let me actually, having given them the opportunity, let me take it back myself. Tell me a little bit more about the specific challenges. I mean, I'm of two minds. I mean, I think you talked about some very specific sort of personnel challenges later in the month. I mean, I will say I'm of two minds in the sense that one, I know there's, you know, issues about, you know, how much time the plaintiffs may have had to prepare their papers and that you may have had less time. On the other hand, the filing of the cases was not really a surprise to anyone. And we know that the executive branch has been, frankly, preparing for months. I mean, they've articulated on a regular basis the fact that they were planning, they had plans B, C, and D already in case the IEEPA tariffs were found to be unsupportable. And so, and I can't imagine a world in which a proclamation was put before the president without legal analysis to support the basis for issuing that proclamation. So it's not as if the government has not been thinking about the legal issues associated with advancing tariffs under Section 122. Nevertheless, I'm, you know, also sympathetic to the specific challenges of, you know, a small team with people who are people. They have lives and, you know, have may have had, you know, pre-planned time away and such. So can help me understand that one a little bit better if I could.
Sure.
As we think about what we need to do here on the schedule.
Yep. So on the first point that you made about an assumption that there would have been legal analysis done ahead of time, I will say that, you know, within my constraints, that the rollout of this was not the same as with other rollouts of decisions by the executive branch. On our schedules, so we have a team of five attorneys and then two supervisors, me and Justin. There are two senior attorneys on that five-person team. One of them is going to be away starting the 16th through the 27th, so that's 2 weeks. I am going to be, it's spring break, I think, is the issue here. So I'm going to be away the 21st through the 28th. And then we have like various people in and out for, you know, 1 or 2 days and, you know, a lot of briefing also in other cases. So that's like logistically where we are. And, you know, because we did this in the IEEPA cases, we know that it's writing these briefs is kind of a full time job while the briefing is happening. So the more compressed the schedule, the more we actually have to take everybody off everything else they're doing to be able to get it out.
Right. No, understood. But I mean, at the same time, I mean, it's the nature of the beast. I mean, there is going to be some significant time compression, I think, under any circumstance, and it's going to be inconvenient for everyone. But okay, let me do this. Why don't we take a short break? And I mean, you all feel free to turn your cameras off or whatever, but you know, maybe keep the line open. Hopefully we can be back in about in 5 to 10 minutes or something, and I'll confer with my colleagues on a separate line, and we'll try to see if we can come to agreement in terms of the schedule to provide to you. I mean, we'll of course document it in an order after the fact, but I want to, you know, share that information with you as soon as possible and get things going. So, all right, we'll be back in about, like I said, within 5 to 10 minutes. Okay. Thank you. Sorry, that took a little longer than I had anticipated. Trying to navigate through a complicated schedule. I think, you know, the government's point, it's not just that it's spring break. I mean, we're, you know, the timing of everything, you know, falls into a number of religious holidays and such as well that we're, you know, we want to try to be sensitive to. Let me ask one thing for the government, an issue for clarification. I mean, sometimes with a motion for summary judgment, you can have a cross motion for summary judgment. Is there, I know that didn't happen in Voss. I mean, is there any reason to be concerned about that possibility here and with the potential impact on the schedule?
So we had not anticipated doing cross motions. We had anticipated doing it the way that we did in Voss.
Just straight up. Okay. All right. Then so let me just explain for everybody's benefit sort of how we got to the schedule that we got to. I mean, and as I said, it was taking into account trying to figure out when we would do the oral argument and trying to work around religious holidays and such. And so working backwards to, you know, get to a time frame where we could we thought it was appropriate to have oral argument. We're going to have that oral argument on April 10th, Friday, April 10th. It'll be in New York. And so in light of that sort of slightly extended period, we worked backwards then. We'll set the reply date for the plaintiffs on the prior Tuesday. That's just April 7th. Because we know everybody's going to be working at this every day between now and sometime, well, whenever the opinion comes out. And then working backwards from the 7th, it's going to be a bit of a crunch, I know, for the plaintiffs to get their reply in. But that allows us to give the government April 3rd to get past their travel plans and hopefully get us a helpful brief for purposes of resolving this, and then we'll go with tomorrow as a deadline for the moving papers, the motion for summary judgment. Just for the sake of transparency, I think once we get done with this call, I'm going to ask Giselle to reach out to the parties in the burlap case, in the private party case, and confirm that they're, you know, inform them of the schedule that we're setting up here and ask about their ability to align themselves with that schedule.
I think Chief,
that would, yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm sorry. When is the date again for the, that we are contemplating for the response to the summary judgment motion again for the government?
The response would be April 3rd. Friday, April
3rd. Yes. And the reply would be April 7th.
The reply is April 7th. And let me just say one other thing about the response, if I could. We've had conversations here about the answer. I think our preference is to have the government file an answer but we're happy to have you file that answer in conjunction with your response. I think we'd like to have that on the record. Okay, so we'll give you until then to file the answer. As I was saying, then I think our intention, once we're done here, we'll reach out to the parties in the burlap case and confirm, or hopefully confirm, their ability to align with this schedule, and then we would anticipate a joint argument. And I think we'll just do it as parallel briefing, but allow the government to file a single brief that gets filed in both cases, a single response brief that gets docketed in both cases. Okay. Any loose ends, open questions that we should address, and also ask my colleagues, is there anything I forgot about in terms of the plans? May I ask
what
colleagues
time would
first.
We start on the 10th there, Chief?
Let's wait, 10 o'clock? Does that work for folks? Is that good? Anybody? Any objections? Right. Any objections to 10? Let's go 10 o'clock then on Friday the 10th. All right. Other loose ends, Mr. Marshall? Anything?
No, Your Honors.
Okay. Ms. Burke?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, I think we've got a game plan at least. And let me just make sure that I'm not getting told by somebody. Okay. Nope. All right. I think we're good then. We will paper the docket with all of this for the record, but it'll be consistent with everything I just told you. Okay. Let me one final question. Any objection? I mean, we do have a tendency, and I know there'll be interest in the case. Anybody have any concerns about posting the audio of the status conference on the court's website?
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. We will likely do that afterwards for transparency purposes. Okay. Thank you all. Appreciate the time. Appreciate your cooperation. And we'll go forward from here. All right. Take care. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Case is not adjourned.